Good morning. Hanne Kustomea.
Good morning, Kustomea.
How are you doing?
Good, how are you this morning?
Baruch Hashem, I'm well. Let's give it another minute before we start. Start with the L'Shem Yichud. L'Shem Yichud Kud Shabri Hu Ishkin Debi Kilu Urchimu Udkilu Udkilu Urchimu Leakta L'Shem Yud He Bobape The Yichud Ashalim B'Shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah Lasok Torah Mitzvah Vahino Amadunai Elohino Alena Masaya Deno Kanane Alena Masaya Deno Kananehu. The second Aliyah in Parashah Miketz starts with Genesis chapter 41, verse 15, and completes with verse 38. This is a total of 24 verses. The number 24 relates to the 24 hours in the day, but it also relates to the idea of the 12 tribes in both the concealed aspect and the revealed aspect.
Has joined.
So we will begin. 24 also relates very much to the idea of duality, the 12 and 12. The male and the female, the good and evil, day and night. All of this is reflected in the number 24. We will start with verse 15. Vayomer paro el Yosef halom halam tiufoter eno. So, Wani Shamati Alecha Lemor Tishma Halom Liftor Oto Vayaan Yosef Et Paro Lemor Biladai Elohim Yane Et Shalom Paro Vaydaber Paro El Yosef Bachalomi, Hineni Omed, Al Sefat Hayor. Vahine Min Hayor, Olot Sheva Parot, Beriot Basar, We vote to our Watirina Bahu Bahine Shiva Marot Acherot Olot Acharechen Salot Viraot to our Meod Virakot Basar Lo Raiti Kahena Bekol Eretz Mitzrayim La Roa La Tokalna Haparot Harakot Veharaot Et Sheva Haparot Harishonot Habiriot La Tavona El Kirbena Velonoda Ivau el kirbena umarehen raka asher batchila vaikats vayere vahalomi vechine sheva shibalim olot vekane echad meleo Tovot Vehine Sheva Shibalim Venu Moda Kot Sheduhot Kadim Somchot Acharechem Vativlan Vativlana Hashivalim Hadakot Et Sheva Shibalim Atovot Waomar El Hachartumim Bein Magidli Vayomer Yosef El Paro Halom Paro Echad Hu Et Asher Ha Elohim Ose Hagid Le Paro Sheva parot hatovot Sheva shanim heina v'sheva hashibalim hatovot Sheva shanim heina chalom echad hu v'sheva haparot harakot v'haraot Haolot Acharechen Sheva Shanim Heina V'sheva Hashibalim Hareko Sheduvot Akadim Yihiyu Sheva Shnei Rav Hu Hadavar Asher Debarti El Paro Asher HaElohim Osehera Et Paro Hine Sheva Shanim Bao Tzava Gadol Bekol Eretz Mitzrayim Vekamu Sheva Shnei Rav Acharechem v'nishkach kohasava be'eretz Mitzrayim v'kila harav et haaretz
Has joined.
V'lo yeivada hasava ba'aretz mifnei harav Ahu achare ken ki kaved hu meot. V'yahash ishanot achalom el paro. Pa'amayim ki nachon hadavar meim ha'elohim. Umaher ha'elohim la'asto. We are Tayere Paro Ishnavon. We shitehu al eretz Mitzrayim yaaseh paro v'yafked bekidim al haaretz v'chimesh et aeretz Mitzrayim v'sheva shnei hasava v'yikbeu et kol okel hashanim hatovot habaot ha'ele v'yitzberu bar tachat yad paro okel be'arim v'shamaru v'chayah ha'okel l'fi kadon la'aretz l'sheva shene ha'ra'av asher tihiyena be'eretz Mitzrayim v'lo tikaret ha'aretz ba'ra'av. Vayitav hadavar ve'ene paro uve'ene kol avadav. Vayomer paro el avadav hanimza kaze ish asher ruach Elohim bo. That's the completion of the reading of the second Aliyah in Hebrew, all 24 verses. For those of you who arrived a little late, the number 24 is connecting to duality. Duality is male and female, good and evil, day and night. So the real question is, what is the aspect of this Aliyah in the Parasha of Miketz? What is the aspect of duality in this Aliyah? And we will start to look at that as we study the English. Verse 15. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter for it, but I have heard it said of you that you understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph replied to Pharaoh, saying, not I. Hashem will give an answer that will bring peace to Pharaoh, except it's not Hashem, it's Elohim. And this is a good example of how the English translation is so difficult to truly understand, because both Hashem, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, and Elohim are translated into English as God, but they're not. They're different levels of God. So the question arises, why is Pharaoh being told that God is the lower level, if Elohim is the lower level? And we know that Elohim relates both to Bina and to Malchut, so we don't know which level Joseph is referring to. We also know that when he was speaking to lesser people, the cupbearer and the baker, and while he was in jail, he didn't say Elohim when he said the same sentence. There he said Hashem. So why to Pharaoh does he say Elohim, but to people who are considered lesser, he says Hashem? Verse 17, and Paro said to Joseph, in my dream, I behold, I was standing on the bank of the Nile. And behold, seven cows of robust flesh and handsome form were ascending from the Nile and they pastured in the marshland. And before I go on, why do we need to have the dream told to us in the Torah now a second time, I believe? Maybe it's a third time. I think we heard it at least once and maybe twice yesterday in the first Aliyah. So why do we need to have it told to us again in the Torah? What is the spiritual lesson that the Torah is teaching us from this repetition? Because we're told there's no additional words in the Torah. So why is it necessary? Verse 19, we'll continue with the dream descriptions. And behold, seven other cows were ascending after them, emaciated in a very ugly form and with meager flesh. I have not seen such ugly ones throughout the entire land of Egypt. And the meager and ugly cows devoured the first seven healthy cows, and they went inside them. But it was not known that they had gone inside of them, for their appearance was as ugly as in the beginning. Then I awoke. You'll notice that there's a description in this, different in the description of this dream from what was told in the first Aliyah. I don't remember it ever saying that it was not known that they had gone inside of them. So, Paro is changing the dream when he's asking. He's really testing Joseph. Verse 22. Then I saw in my dream, and behold, seven ears of grain were growing on one stalk, full and good. And behold, seven ears of grain, hardened, thin, and beaten by the east wind, were growing up after them. And the thin ears of grain swallowed up the seven good ears of grain. I told the necromancers, but no one tells me its meaning. And Joseph said to Paro, Paro's dream is one. What God is doing, he has told Paro. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears of grain are 7 years. It is one dream. And the seven meager and ugly cows coming up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty ears of grain beaten by the east wind will be 7 years of famine. It is this matter that I have spoken to Paro. What God, Elohim, is about to do, he has shown Paro. Behold, 7 years are coming, great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. And 7 years of famine will arise after them, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. And the famine will destroy the land. And the plenty will not be known because of that famine to follow, for it will be very severe. And concerning the repetition of the dream to Paro twice, that is because the matter is ready to emanate from Hashem, Elohim, and Elohim is hastening to execute it. So now let Paro seek out an understanding and wise man and appoint him over the land of Egypt. Now, where did that come from? It's Joseph speaking. But why would he suggest this? Did he see that interpretation in the duality of the dreams? Where did it come from? Verse 34. Let Paro do this and appoint officials over the land, and prepare the land of Egypt during the 7 years of plenty. And let them collect all the food of these coming good years, and let them gather the grain under Pharaoh's hand, food in the cities, and keep it. Thus the food will remain as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine, which will be in the land of Egypt, so that the land will not be destroyed by the famine. The matter pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. So Pharaoh said to his servants, "Will we find anyone like this, a man in whom there is the spirit of Elohim?" That is the completion of the English translation. Does anybody have any questions? We will continue our study of Hanukkah. If you remember yesterday, we reached a point a long paragraph that we didn't have time to finish, though, and it's titled "The Mishnah Torah, the Scroll of Esther, and Hanukkah, Chapter 3, Verse 1 and 2. And we mentioned that there is a scroll for Hanukkah, but we don't read it in the synagogue. V'vayit sheni k'shem al-keyawan Gazru Gazerot al Yisrael uvitlu Tatam velo hi eini hu o tam la asok the Torah uvmitzot uvmitzvot upashtu yadam umam onam uvivnotehem Panik Nasule Laheko Ufartu Bo Piratsot Patimu Hataharot Pitsar Lahem Li Israel Miod Mifnehem Uhatsum Lahatskado Ad Sherichem Alechem Elo Avotenu, Behoshiam, Miadam, Behitzilam, Wegavru, Bene Hashmonai, Akohanim, Agdukidolim, Beharagum, Behoshio, Yisrael, Miadam. Ha'amidu melech min ha'kohanim V'chazra malchut l'Yisrael Yeter al matayim shanad. During the period of the Second Temple, when the Greek kings were in power, they proclaimed decrees against the Jewish people, abrogating their religion and forbidding them to study the Torah or to perform the divine precepts, mitzvot. They laid their hands on their wealth and their daughters. They entered the temple and broke through it, defiling the things that were pure. The people of Israel were sorely distressed by their enemies, who oppressed them ruthlessly until Hashem of our fathers took pity, saved and rescued them from the hands of the tyrant. Some of the things that the Greeks decreed was there was no Brit Milah. They decreed there was no study of Torah. According to the scroll of Hanukkah, when a woman and a man were to be married, her first night was to be with the captain of the Greek forces in that area, who represented the king of the Greeks. So anybody who got married was essentially raped. These are the things that we are told was what was so vexing to the children of Israel. And yet, on the other hand, we're told that there were Jewish people who became Hellenized, that they were so attracted to the wisdom of the Greeks, the logical approach to wisdom, that is the Greek philosophy, that they became Hellenized. They were Jewish. They went to the synagogue. They practiced. They showed up in the temple three times a year. But they really were not connected to Hashem. They had a desire for the physical pleasures, for the economic wealth of the Greek Empire, for whatever aspect that Greek society provided to them. When I say society, I mean culture. How do we reconcile these two disparate discussions? How do we reconcile that someone could be Hellenized and still be upset that he couldn't do Brit Milah on his son? And the spiritual lesson that is taught in this paragraph, in my opinion, is a very simple truth. Human beings are not logical. They do not act logically. They justify their actions logic. They justify their actions with logic. But that is not why they do their actions. And if you really look at each individual human being's actions, you will see inconsistencies. And this is especially true if you evaluate your own actions. And if you begin to see the truth of the statement I just made, this will help you in your spiritual growth, because you will realize that you're not acting out of logic. Can we say that a person in our society who is racist is acting logical? So why does a person become racist? And we'll have sociologists and psychotherapists and psychologists and psychiatrists. They will all give you different answers. Why does a person become racist? It has to do with their previous lifetime. It has to do with a tikkun that they have. But how can we know that? How can we prove that? Intuitively, you will know what I've said is true. And in time, you will come to understand the truth of the statement. That's the end of the class. We will continue to study more tomorrow on Hanukkah, as much as we have time to do, through the 8 days. Does anyone have any questions? And while you're unmuting yourself, I remind you that our Rosh Chodesh Tevet connection is on the sixth night of Hanukkah, which is at 7 p.m. West Coast time tomorrow, Tuesday night. Today's classes, at 11 o'clock, we continue our basic class. And this week, we are ready to discuss mind over matter. We have a deep Zohar class in candle lighting that starts at 4 p.m. West Coast time. And our 7 o'clock class will be an essay by the Ari. So are there any questions? I wish you all shalom gadol.
I have a statement.
Go ahead.
Comment was, if in the rite of first night, because there's, you know, copulation there, the essence of that Greek goes into the woman. So that essence would then just start permeating then into the psyche of the Jewish people.
That's correct. That's why they do it.
Yeah. That's all. Thank you.
There's a physical reason, of course, because it humiliates the male in a chauvinistic society. The male who cannot protect his wife demeans himself as a man. But it, on the spiritual level, it's really to potentially impregnate the woman, but it's also spiritually what happens. The man is leaving an essence of that sperm in the womb.
Right.
And that's really what the purpose was. Even if the Greeks did not understand it intuitively, that's why they did it.
I was reading into this more this weekend, and I found that this came all the way from way before, like in Samaria, that they would do that as well. So I think it's been a ritual that's been taken a long time, every conquering nation to the conquered.
I'm not sure. I think it went even further back in Samaria, but the archaeologists have not indicated that, and that's where that information.
I'm sorry, you broke up.
I'm sorry, I was far away from the phone. This is better. I think it goes before Samaria, but the essence of it, the archaeologist, the science does not have the tools or the resources to go to study it further.
Mm-hmm.
So they can only go back to when there was some form of written communication. And it probably went back as far as the cave dwellers.
Probably, yeah. Some of the articles that I read, which I found very interesting, was some academia type people putting like a spin of, did it really happen? We really do not have any evidence. They quoted the Talmud, but they said, but that's really not reliable, which was really upsetting to me, you know? But, you know, that's just it, is, did it really happen, you know?
Did it really happen in the Greek times? Yeah. Do we know?
I'm not asking. I'm very certain that probably just did happen, and even beyond. I'm just saying that some of the articles I read, it was an academia-type person saying that it probably didn't happen, and it was a legend. And I'm going like, good gosh, what are these people drinking, you know?
Well, there are a lot of Jewish people who are drinking that same Kool-Aid.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Awesome. Thank you.
Trust your intuition. You'll know what truth is through your intuition.
Yeah. I have a question.
Go ahead, Martha.
You know, in the DNA, that they would take the mother's, you are Jewish if by your mother's DNA, I guess you would say. I don't know if that's correct or not. But that's how you would know if you're Jewish, is by the mother's family history, right? So with that said, if the Greeks did impregnate and or the seed was impressed in her womb, and when she did have her first child, that first child would be mixed, Greek and Jewish, correct? Is that...
Well, let's go back to your first premise. There is a difference in how the current science delineates between the male DNA and the female DNA. I'm not an expert in it, but I understand there's a difference in the way it's determined. That they have taken the female DNA back to seven different women in the times of the cave people, but they can't take it back that far to the time of the male. So I'm not sure that since the premise you're raising, I don't think is correct. I can't really assess what you're asking or the logical approach that you're using. But essentially, there are Middle Eastern peoples that all have similar DNA structures, both for female and male. And so there is some influence from the Greek, and from Macedonia, which is the northern part of Greek at that time with Alexander. And there is influence, and there is the spreading of it. And one of the things that Rabbi Berg expressed in one of his Shabbat lectures or drashim was that the purpose of men is to spread DNA. And that's why they are given this desire to be with different women, so that they will spread their DNA. It's the essence of the male, the sharing component of male, wanting to expand and grow. I mean, there's a lot of other psychological reasons expressed in the academia as well. But Rabbi Berg was very specific that the reason why men have a desire to be with other women than his wife has to do with the essence of being a sharing human being. But as we know, if the sharing is outside of the marriage contracts, that it lacks holiness, and that is not Hashem's plan. Hashem's plan is to enhance the world through holiness. And that's why we have marriage contracts. That's why we have marriages. But Malka, I suggest you do some more research. We live in an amazing time where there's so much information available on the internet. Some of it is truthful, some of it is not. But this information is available, and you can find out if your approach is correct and find out what the differences are between the measurement of a female DNA and the male DNA, which is really, my language is probably not correct. It probably implies something that's not correct. But I haven't done the research and I haven't had the time to do it. I obviously didn't have the interest to pursue it.
May I add something, please?
Of course.
Along the same lines, Malka, right?
Right.
I had also read in from my studies several years ago, when the Crusaders were going east to Jerusalem, they would go through all these towns and just ransack them and pick Jewish women to rape them because they were headed to conquer Jerusalem. And so after that, that's where within the articles that I had been reading, different essays, different investigations, looking for lost 10 tribes, et cetera, et cetera. And who's Jewish and who isn't, that they had the Bet Din at some point say that because so many women were being pregnant, and then what do you do with these children that came from Jewish women, then they had in addition added that the mother's DNA would account for that child not being a bastard. Now, how true all that is, I kind of left it alone for a while because it was really sad to me. That's all I can contribute.
Appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
You all have a beautiful day. Shalom gadol kwal.
Shalom.
Shalom. Shalom. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Hannah.